This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Thousands of people have turned out for a glimpse of the Queen's funeral cortege as she begins her final journey ahead of her funeral next week in London. The late monarch's coffin has been taken from Balmoral Castle in northeast Scotland to the capital, Edinburgh. Our correspondent Barbara Miller prepared this report.
A last goodbye to Balmoral, the Highland retreat where it was said the Queen could hang up her crown. There were tears in the nearby village of Ballater as the Queen's coffin passed by. Here they consider her more a neighbour than a monarch. In Aberdeen, on the east coast, 10-year-old Ruby appreciated the significance of the moment.
9 out of 10 people have lived in her reign, so it's pretty impressive. And a monarch like this is never going to happen again. So,
and what do you think of the new monarch, the king?
I think he's a good person. Like, I think he's going to reign with his point of view on it. So I think he's going to be a good king.
Jonathan Duncan, who'd come with his son and baby grandson, wasn't so sure about the new king.
To be perfectly honest, I would rather have seen Charles step aside and maybe Prince William take up the reins. But I guess there is a line of succession to follow.
Why would you have preferred that?
I just think that Prince Charles's life is a little bit tarnished with the whole Princess Diana, Camilla saga.
In the end, it was all over so quickly. Some clapped as the Queen passed by. Others didn't know what to do with themselves.
I was shaking. I can't explain it.
That's Angela Mafuko from Zimbabwe, watching on with Julianne Cole from Kyogle in New South Wales.
This is my friend Angela that I've only just met today. So we've met and we've been talking about how it did actually hit us in a way, an emotional way, that I didn't expect. You know, I'm not a royalist.
There are still many more days of pomp and ceremony to go before the Queen's funeral.
Is it the right amount, too much, too little?
Sometimes it can feel too much, especially like, you know, sporting occasions getting cancelled and all the rest of it. But in the long term, when you look back, given that she's spent 70 years dedicating herself to the duties that she swore to undertake, I think, you know, a weekend, 10 days is not really too much.
Much has been said about the Queen's love for Scotland, yet opinion here on the monarchy is divided. This is the country where some, including the leader Nicola Sturgeon, still toy with the idea of breaking away from the United Kingdom. For today, that debate was largely set aside as Scotland paid its respects. As the crowds thinned, Julianne and Angela weren't quite sure what to do next. But being there as the Queen made her final journey home is something they will never forget.
Friends on Facebook now.
We're friends on Facebook.
This is Barbara Miller in Aberdeen reporting for AM.
Well, as the UK continues mourning for its longest reigning monarch, our correspondent Alison Horne is in Edinburgh.
Well, Sabra, the crowd here had spent hours in anticipation watching the procession as it made its way from Balmoral down the east coast of Scotland. There were thousands of people packing the streets. They were trying to get a glimpse from any vantage point that they could. They were climbing up fences, getting on people's shoulders for this quite historic occasion. And as the Queen's hearse drove down the Royal Mile here in Edinburgh, this almost eerie hush fell over the crowd. It was quite a solemn silence. You could see people were quite visibly upset. There were people crying in the crowd. And then as she went past and arrived into Holyrood House, the official residence of the royals here in Scotland, the crowd erupted in spontaneous applause. And I think that gives you a bit of an understanding of the breadth of emotions that people have been feeling here, a lot of sorrow and grief, but also seeing this as a chance to celebrate Queen Elizabeth and celebrate her life.
What happens next?
So the Queen will lay in rest at Holyrood House overnight. Tomorrow, the King and Queen Consort will arrive here before the procession up the Royal Mile towards St Giles Cathedral. When the Queen arrives at St Giles Cathedral, there will be a prayer and vigil service held, which will be attended by the royals. And then her body will lay in rest there for 24 hours. That'll be the opportunity for people here who have travelled from all across Scotland, including some people we spoke to from Glasgow today, their opportunity to say a final farewell to their Queen, to see her coffin and say goodbye. After 24 hours, she will be moved to London in preparation for her funeral. The one quick thing I did want to point out, though, Sabra, is this attention will be on King Charles, his first official visit here as the new king. A lot of people have reflected to me that Queen Elizabeth was at times seen as the glue that bonded a sometimes tumultuous relationship between Scotland and England. So there'll be a lot of attention on King Charles' performance here.
That's Alison Horne reporting there from Edinburgh. Later this week, the Prime Minister and the Governor-General fly to London for the Queen's funeral. There'll be a National Day of Mourning in Australia on Thursday, the 22nd of September, and we'll have a one-off public holiday for that. So with King Charles now Australia's head of state, reporter Annie Guest has been asking people what they expect from the new monarch.
In a park near the Brisbane River, children from three families play in the sun as their Afghanistan-born parents catch up. Some older siblings are not far away.
Yeah, every week.
Yeah, every Sunday. Unless there's like rain or something.
Hang out with the friends, walk around the park, have a chat.
Do you have a picnic?
Yeah.
The children were all born in Australia, and this 14-year-old is excited the country has a new king.
Like in the past year, it was the first time I opened news, and I was just watching there, waiting for that. For King Charles to come through the door. I was there for like hours. Like, when is he going to come out? And then he finally came out. I was relieved.
He watched on TV as Australia's new head of state signed a declaration and oath.
Yeah, I would love to meet him, in person especially. It would be lovely to for him to come to Australia.
His friends, aged 12 and 13, are also enthusiastic.
Yes, that'd be nice. Yeah.
Why is that? What do you think would be nice about it?
Getting to see a monarch.
Would you come and line up and wave if King Charles came to Australia?
Of course I would.
Down the road, three friends chat over a drink at a pub while they sit at a table on the footpath.
The dog.
Feed the kids, leave
them. They're all in their 20s, one working as an electrician, another as an apprentice tattooist, while the third is studying psychology while working part-time. All say they feel little connection to Australia's new head of state.
I don't think it really impacts me. I'm not going to dislike the monarchy because obviously we all know it's a bit outdated. You know, the Queen was an important figure. I'm not trying to about the UK.
Like a celebrity or a musician's past. Like,
do you think that Australia will relate any differently to King Charles than it did to his mother?
Yes, I think so because, like, we all grew up with the Queen. Everyone was used to the Queen. Now she's gone, and now Australia's like, we're so different from like the UK now. You know what I mean? It's like, how much do we really care about them? Like,
it's more pop culture as opposed to like actual changes.
Personally, I think that we should aim towards more like First Nation governments as well, like integrating that.
I really agree with that statement.
Yeah.
But nearby, a couple in their 40s who work in banking and accountancy have a different view.
It's more like it's a symbolic. So nothing really changes in terms of foreign policy. Yeah. I'm sure that there will be some other people using that as an opportunity to argue for being a republic. Yeah.
But you don't agree?
Personally, it's indifferent for me.
That's what I'm thinking as well. Like, I wonder, you know, what's going to change in future.
A couple in South Brisbane speaking with our reporter Annie Guest. The Queen's death has drawn a mixed response in the Caribbean, where a number of former British colonies had already started the process of cutting ties with the monarchy. Jamaica is expected to follow Barbados in becoming a republic, but some say it shouldn't stop there in shaking off its past. North America correspondent Jade McMillan reports from Jamaica's capital, Kingston.
At a busy market in downtown Kingston, there's a sense of sadness among many of the stallholders. 70-year-old Marie Mitchell was born around the same time that Queen Elizabeth ascended to the throne.
I grew up hearing about her,
And, you know, we always, like, we go to school, we talk about the Queen and the King and the Prince and the Princesses.
The Queen visited Jamaica on 6 occasions, and Charlie McLean says she had the opportunity to meet her more than once.
She was, or what would call it, no, a people person.
But while many older Jamaicans hold fond memories of Her Majesty, views have shifted when it comes to younger generations. 36-year-old JD believes it's time for his country to sever its ties with the monarchy.
I've never been one to acknowledge the Queen or the royal family in that regard, so it's neither here nor there, but it's sad losing a loved one. So in that regard, I feel sorry for the family.
When Jamaica gained independence from Britain in 1962, it kept Queen Elizabeth as its head of state. Now there's a growing push to become a republic, just as Barbados did last year. Jamaica's Prime Minister surprised many in March during an at times awkward visit by the now Prince and Princess of Wales by telling Prince William his country was moving on. Protesters took to the streets of Kingston during that tour, demanding a formal apology from the monarchy over its historical links to the transatlantic slave trade, which saw hundreds of thousands of enslaved people from Africa forced to work on Jamaican plantations. Scholar and advocate Rosalie Hamilton says reparations should also be paid.
The wealth that has been built was built on the backs of the blood, sweat and tears of our foreparents. And I think that reality is beginning to hit home, because that's not the history we were taught. Compensation takes many forms. There's institutional compensation that's on the table. There's debt forgiveness. So it's not simply about cash payment. It's about a process of healing.
Speaking in Jamaica earlier this year, Prince William expressed what he described as profound sorrow over slavery, echoing comments made by his father, the now King Charles III, when he told the ceremony marking the shift to a republic in Barbados that slavery, quote, forever stains our history. Jamaican advocates hope it's a sign of a different approach from a new monarch. This is Jade McMillan in Kingston, Jamaica, reporting for AM.
As we've mentioned, there'll be a public holiday next week for a National Day of Mourning for the Queen. Political reporter Claudia Long has been taking a look at how businesses will have to adapt to the last-minute holiday.
For Apollo Bay Caravan Park owner Bruce Flack, the one-off public holiday on the National Day of Mourning for the Queen is bringing an unexpected effect.
The phone's certainly been ringing. I mean,
that's because for Victorians, the Thursday holiday on top of the AFL Grand Final Friday holiday will produce a four-day long weekend.
We were probably 75% full prior to the announcement. It certainly will have an impact. We will be full definitely on the Thursday night.
But while it's a welcome boost, he's worried about the impact on other businesses.
It's great to say that we may be full for extra night, but there's a lot of pressure on a lot of our industry, I suppose, at this time with no workers.
The Victorian head of the Australian Industry Group, Tim Piper, says the extra public holiday will cause complications.
It's going to make life more difficult than we need it to be for business.
With schools and daycare centres closed and government offices and banks shut, he says business owners across the nation will have a juggling act.
Literally being given 10 days notice, and that will make a difference to what they're able to manufacture, what their planning is for the month. At the moment, you know, particularly the food companies are getting into rhythm for what they're going to be doing in the lead up to Christmas.
And on top of logistics, there's an added expense.
If businesses want to continue working on that day, then they're obviously got to pay public holiday rates to keep people working, and many of them will have to do that. So obviously there will be an increase in costs to business, or if they're not open, then they'll lose that business days.
It's obviously a very sad occasion and a very unique one as well.
Sarah Hunter is a senior economist at KPMG. She says workers outside Victoria may also want to take an extra long weekend.
What's interesting about this one is that we might see a slightly larger impact than we perhaps have seen from other public holidays, just because it's occurring on a Thursday. And so we might see that people then decide to take and make a long weekend out of that. I think we can expect to see a little bit of an impact on the economy, but it'll be very short-lived, so we'll jump right back again as we go into the December quarter.
Sarah Hunter says a useful comparison is looking at recent one-off public holidays in the UK for royal weddings and jubilees.
There's actually some evidence of that in the UK and some of the recent ones where they've also occurred on a Thursday. The Friday tends to be a quiet day in the office, as it were, and then people are obviously going away for the weekend.
But while not all business owners might be welcoming the break, don't expect to see a huge impact on the economy in the long term.
It'll just be a little blip in the current quarter, and then the economy will bounce right back.
Senior economist at KPMG, Sarah Hunter, ending Claudia Long's report. At least a dozen people have been killed in Sydney's gangland conflict during the past 2 years, many of them in drive-by shootings allegedly orchestrated by major crime networks. But there's another gang war being waged in the city's western suburbs, where the battle lines are drawn between postcodes and the violence is referenced in rap music. An investigation by Four Corners reveals the links between street gangs and some of Australia's notorious crime families. And a warning, Grace Tobin's report contains references to violence.
Now we don't stop and there's a type, brother, we fully automatic. We got hollers, we got backs, brother, fully causing havoc.
In a shopping centre car park in Sydney's southwest suburbs, Demons and his crew are filming a rap video for his social media.
Cut throat, in your throat, leave the scene, tape it.
The lyrics are raw and very real. He's rapping about a crime he's been convicted and sent to youth detention for, the stabbing of a 20-year-old with a box cutter.
And at the end of the day, we solve all our problems. We don't run away from them. And so, yeah, one thing led to another that happened.
Why did you stab him?
I don't know much about him, mate, so can't really speak on that.
Well, why did you need to stab him then if you didn't know much about him?
You know, shit happens.
Demons says an ongoing conflict between postcode gangs means taking a train to an area that's not his can be dangerous.
Obviously, we all know there's like conflict in West Sydney. There's a war going on right now. So, yeah, everyone knows which lines to take. And if you're willing to go that way, you know, you've got to be prepared to go to war.
The 19-year-old says he's trying to leave gang life behind, but his music is part of a subgenre of rap called drill, where artists must reference real violence. It's concerning New South Wales police.
The basis of drill music is that unless you have actually done the crime, so unless you've actually done the act that you are singing about, you generally can't sing about that act.
Acting Assistant Commissioner Jason Weinstein says while he hasn't yet found any examples of drill music inciting violence, it has further inflamed tensions between postcode gangs.
Some of the music was about a tit-for-tat type scenario, and there was some baiting going on.
A major artist on the police radar is rapper A Huncho. The 25-year-old, whose real name is Ali Yunus, is a member of Sydney's notorious Alameddine family.
Obviously, my family, they've all been charged. Majority of my boys are in jail. And the news and telegraphs and all the media label us as the most dangerous crime family in the country. And I'm part of that, allegedly, you know what I mean?
He's pleaded not guilty to charges including reckless grievous bodily harm and assault with the intent to participate in a criminal group. A Huncho's drill music is filled with references ranging from postcode rivalries to gangland shootings.
People know that, like, when I rap, you're hearing realness, you know? You're not hearing no fake shit. I come from that environment. So I would say I'm the realest rapper that this country's got. Most dangerous? I don't know. That's for the audience to decide.
Four Corners has uncovered links between Sydney's organised crime networks and postcode gangs. In a shooting late last year, four alleged associates of the Alameddine family were targeted outside a gym. One of the alleged gunmen has been a high-profile member of the Mount Druitt postcode gang. He was allegedly hired by a member of the rival Harmsey family. Police allege the Alameddines also use members of a street gang as their foot soldiers.
They might facilitate the movement of drugs, the storage of firearms. They may go and do kidnappings on behalf of that organised crime family.
A Huncho has been accused of recruiting young gang members into the Alameddine crime network, a claim he denies.
There's no criminal network. There's nothing like that. It's just that's something that the police have made up or the media have made up. There's no such thing of it. There's no crime network.
Rapper A Huncho ending Grace Tobin's report. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. With the death of Queen Elizabeth II,
push for Scottish independence could intensify, along with similar movements in Northern Ireland and Wales. Today, author Dennis Altman on what King Charles III can do to stop the United Kingdom from falling apart and what it all means for our own ties to the monarchy. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.